Now we move into the 14th chapter of Joshua. This chapter begins by describing the general method that was taken in dividing the land on the west side of the Jordan River, that is in the land of Canaan proper itself. So let's read the first five verses. And in these are the countries which the children of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel distributed for inheritance to them. By lot was their inheritance, as the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses, for the nine tribes and for the half tribe. For Moses had given the inheritance of the two tribes and a half on the other side of Jordan, but unto the Levites he gave none inheritance among them. For the children of Joseph were two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim. Therefore they gave no part unto the Levites in that land, save cities to dwell in, with their suburbs for their cattle and for their substance. And as the Lord commanded Moses, so the children of Israel did, and they divided the land. So now the writer of Joshua, after having given in the previous chapter an account of how this territory was disposed of on the east side of the Jordan, he now proceeds to tell about how it's going to be distributed on the west side of the Jordan in Canaan proper. Now, up to this time, the Israelites had been closely encamped in a body. They had wandered in, according to historians, off of the desert like other tribes had done in previous years. Those who have studied such things say that about every 1,000 years there was a tribe of nomads that wandered in off of this great desert, and they moved into the Fertile Crescent, into this area that was productive, and they crowded the other tribes that were already there and made war with them and made themselves a place. And so to historians it looks like that's just what had happened to the Israelites. And true it was. These Israelites had lived in a nomad type fashion. Most of these people had never known any other kind of an existence except to live as nomads. Most of the elders, except for Caleb and Joshua, had died in the wilderness. They were the ones who knew anything about Egypt. So that these people, for the most part, had only known a nomadic existence, living in the wilderness, traveling from place to place, living in temporary camps. They'd never had a land to call their own, never had a territory that they could truly inhabit and say was theirs, and they could plant trees and vineyards and dig wells and build houses and say that we're going to stay here and generations after us will still be able to enjoy these things. They had simply lived a nomadic existence up to this point. So it's going to be quite a change now for these people to have a territory that's theirs. They've inherited it. They can put their name on it and say, it is mine. I live here. I belong here. And I plan to stay. So this will be a new thing. So Canaan then was to be inhabited by God's people. It would have been subdued in vain if it had not been inhabited. There's no need to have a territory if you can't inhabit it. And the same thing is true with us today as we think of the heavenly city. There where Christ has said, I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am there you may be also. It'd be in vain for Christ to prepare a place if it were not going to be inhabited. And true, we do look forward to that heavenly habitation. But yet, this land had to be settled in an orderly and regular fashion. There were divisions to be made of it. And so every man couldn't just go and settle where he wanted to go settle. There was not to be a competition for who got the better parts or who got the more desirable areas. But it was going to be distributed according to the directions that God gave Moses that it should be made. And so it says, as the Lord commanded Moses, so the children of Israel did, and they divided the land. Now we find this command given to Moses back in Numbers 26, beginning with the 53rd verse. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, unto these the land shall be divided for an inheritance according to the number of names. To many thou shalt give the more inheritance, to few thou shalt give the less inheritance. To every one shall his inheritance be given according to those that were numbered of him. Notwithstanding, the land shall be divided by lot. According to the names of the tribes of their fathers shall they inherit. According to the lot shall the possession thereof be divided between many and few. So we see how God gave the direction to Moses, and so Joshua was going to follow right according to this very same plan and rule that was given to Moses. I'd also like to notice here that the managers of this great affair were to be Joshua, the chief magistrate, Eleazar, the chief priest, and 10 princes, one of each of the tribes that were now to have their inheritance, whom God himself had nominated some years before, as you read in Numbers 34, beginning with the 17th verse. These are the names of the men which shall divide the land unto you, Eleazar the priest, and Joshua the son of Nun, and you shall take one prince of every tribe to divide the land by inheritance. And then he proceeds to give the names of the men that were chosen. So they're following right along with the way God had outlined the plan to be done to Moses. And so it would seem then that since every tribe had a representative of its own, might be satisfied that there was fair dealing and might be more contented once its lot had been distributed to it. Now here again specifies the fact that the tribes among whom this dividend was to be made were the 9.5 tribes. It did not include the 2.5 tribes that had already been seated on the east side of the Jordan. He specifies that very clearly. They had chosen their territory. They had been allowed to inherit it by Moses. And consequently, they had no claim on this territory now in the land of Canaan proper. So they were excluded. It also did not include the tribe of Levi, which he again enumerates here again. They were to be provided for otherwise. God had distinguished them from and dignified them above the other tribes, and they must not now mingle themselves with these other tribes, nor cast their lot among them, for this would entangle them in the affairs of this life, which would not consist with their due attendance to the sacred functions of God. And he also states that Joseph here would not have a tribe, but Joseph's two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, which was in accordance with the fact that Jacob adopted Joseph's two sons, and they would each be given tribes, so that the number of the tribes would be brought back up to 12, though Levi had been taken out, and though Joseph had been taken out. Now Levi and Joseph were original sons. Had they had inheritances and tribes that were going to receive inheritances, that would have made the total number 12. But since they were taken out, it brought the number back down to 10. But whenever Ephraim and Manasseh were added in, the sons of Joseph, that brought the number back to 12. So there were 12 tribes who did receive actual physical inheritances in this land of Canaan. And then he talks about the rule by which they went about to attend to this matter of distributing the territory. And the rule was that they went by the lot. Now the fact that it was distributed by lot means that it was not left up to the wisdom and judgment of anybody, not even Joshua, to decide who got what. In dividing it by lot, they referred themselves to God and to His wisdom and sovereignty, and they believed Him then to be fitter to determine for them than they for themselves. As he says in Psalms 47, verse 4, He shall choose our inheritance for us. So it is God who does the choosing about who receives what in the way of an inheritance. And consequently, when it's all said and done then, nobody has any right to complain or to murmur and say that he has been cheated or hadn't been given his due, appropriate share of the land, because it was given by lot. Consequently, it was God who did the choosing and not man. So they were to have a willingness to abide by the determination of it. Every man must take what is his lot. Each man must make the best of what was given to him. And you can see how it would be real easy now for people to start thinking bad things about I didn't get this, or I didn't get that, or somebody else got something that's so much better than mine. Each person took what was his, made the best of it, and consequently it was then a true blessing of God. Now, one very interesting feature of this is that we today are in a very similar position to those Israelites as Joshua was preparing to divide the land among them by lot. We today have an inheritance. We today are in the position of preparing to receive this inheritance. I'd like to read from Ephesians, the first chapter, beginning with the 10th verse, that in the dispensation of the fullness of times he might gather together in one all things in Christ, both which are in heaven and which are on earth, even in him. Verse 11, in whom also we have obtained an inheritance, being predestinated according to the purpose of him who worketh all things after the counsel of his own will, that we should be to the praise of his glory who first trusted in Christ. Now he talks here about we have obtained an inheritance. When you look at this word inheritance, you look up the meaning of it, it means to be given something by lot. So that we today, as we look for our inheritance, as we look for our portion to be given in the heavenly Canaan, it's going to be given to us by lot, very similar to what it was given to these children of Israel. So that it will be Christ who does the giving. Each one will be appointed a portion that is his. We do not have to vie for something. We do not have to compete for something. We do not have to worry about being cheated in any kind of way or looking out after our interests. It's given to us by lot. That's what the word means in the New Testament. And consequently, it's God that does the giving. So just as Joshua gave out this land by lot to these people, and it was in the end result then God that did the giving, even so the New Testament Joshua, Jesus, gives out our inheritance, and it'll also be by lot, and so consequently it's God that does the giving. We do not have to worry about having to be ever so concerned about being cheated out of anything, because it's given to us by lot. And so God does the giving, and consequently, he shall choose our inheritance for us. So it's a beautiful thought, and it's also a very appropriate figure that we today are going to follow in line with the very same principle that they had in the Old Testament as they divided the land of Canaan. Beginning with the 6th verse through the remainder of this chapter, we have the story of Caleb's appeal and receiving of that territory that he was promised to him because he was a faithful spy, that is the area of Hebron. So the 6th verse says, then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite said unto him, thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. So here we have Caleb coming and making his appeal before the lots are cast. In order to prevent the possibility of him not receiving that due portion that was his, and in order to prevent the need for having God to twice determine that this land belonged to him, he made his petition before the lots were cast so that he could get that had been promised to him when he was a faithful spy back some 40 years ago. And he brought with him the children of Judah, that is the no doubt the elders and leaders of this tribe of Judah, since he was of that tribe, to verify and to back him in this petition so that Joshua could realize that this was not going against the desires of the other people also for this man to receive his just due. And he says in verse 7, 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to espy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in mine heart. So here we have the man, besides Joshua, who is the oldest man in all Israel. He was 40 years old at the time he was sent to spy out the land, and now they spent some 38 years after that in the wilderness and some 6 or 7 years conquering this land of Canaan, and so he's now going to be 85 years old. And all the others who were above the age of 20 died in the wilderness. So he is one of the oldest men, second only to Joshua, in this whole nation of Israel. And so if anybody deserves any recognition, if anybody deserves to be venerated and have the honor accorded by length of service, then it would go to Caleb. And so he gives the account of it here. The Lord sent me out to spy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in mine heart. That is, when Caleb came back, he told the Lord what he believed in his heart. He truly believed that they could take the land. He believed that the Lord would be with them. He believed that they would have enough strength with the aid of the Lord to conquer this country. And so he said it like he believed it. And this seems to be a principle we should all realize when it comes to the truth. It's not enough just to say the truth. It's not enough just to repeat the truth. We have to really believe it in our heart. It has to be a part of us. It has to be that thing that is so deeply ingrained in us that our total life is associated with it, and we are truly, truly committed to it then as the one article of our very existence. The truth as it is in the heart. That's the way Caleb brought back this message. I brought him word again as it was in mine heart. Nevertheless, mine brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. And we remember the story of how the other 10 spies, besides Caleb and Joshua, they brought back a very poor report. Now, their report talked about how mighty these people were, how mighty these Anak were, that we look like grasshoppers in their sight. They've got walls of their cities that go up to heaven, and there's no way we can conquer this country. They made the heart of the people melt. Now we have to realize that those who do not have the truth in their heart, those who are not standing for and teaching and propagating the truth, their listeners, their hearers, their supporters are going to have their heart to melt. They will not be able to conquer the things that need to be conquered in order to have Canaan. They just cannot do it. They will believe that God's not going to be with us, God's not going to make this possible, God's not going to allow this or that to happen, and consequently, their heart will be made to melt. But whenever we believe the truth and have it in our heart and teach it according to what it is in our heart, then, of course, those promises of God are going to be made ours and will be brought into reality. So in verse 9, Caleb continues his story. And Moses sware on that day, saying, surely the land wherein thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance, and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. So he has the promise given him that he can have this land, the land that he trod on. It'll be thine inheritance, and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. So that is the promise. He reminds Joshua of it here as he brings his petition, and no doubt Joshua had good remembrance of it also. Verse 10, and now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. So Caleb says, the Lord hath kept me alive. Now what a blessing this is, not only for Caleb, but for all of us, just to know that the Lord has kept us alive. We have been allowed to live. We've been allowed to have a purpose here in this life, a goal to work for, and a reason to exist, and then to be given that existence. And so each one of us should daily and hourly have the constant awareness of the fact that it's the Lord is keeping us alive. We're kept alive for some reason, for some purpose. Let us find out what that purpose is. Let us try to fulfill it. Let us make the very most of it, because there's a reason here for us to have life. And Caleb seems to rejoice in the fact that he was alive, and he realized fully that he was alive because the Lord had kept me alive. Our very next breath of air comes from the Lord. Our next meal comes from the Lord. Our next day, our next hour comes from the Lord. And so let's realize that, and let's fully then apply ourselves and put ourselves to the task of being a faithful servant of God and fulfilling our purpose here in this life. So at this time, Caleb was 85 years old. Verse 11, "As yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war, both to go out and to come in." So Caleb says, I still have the strength to fight just like I did. I'm able to make war, to be a soldier. At this age of 85, I have the same strength as I did back when I was 40 years old. Verse 12, "Now therefore give me this mountain whereof the Lord spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how that the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord to be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out as the Lord said." Now it's spoken back in the 10th chapter of how they had already captured this city of Hebron and subdued it, but no doubt that might have been just including this future victory that Caleb was going to have in order to completely subdue the land. Because here he does speak of the fact that if the Lord so be with me, that then I shall be able to drive them out. So there was still some conquering to be done, and Caleb was planning to do it. He said he was able to do it, but he was going to do it dependent upon the fact, if the Lord will be with me. Well, we're out of time for this segment of our study, so we'll conclude at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.